Thank you so much for joining us today. Taking time out of your busy schedule with Les Mis. How's the tour going?
Oh, it's going. I mean, it's going strong. We've been we're well off into our third year now. So, with a few breaks here and there, it's been going very strong. And we've been from coast to coast and back again.
How long have you been with the production?
So I started rehearsals in August of 2022. We
Okay.
opened in Cleveland in October of that year, and been going the whole time. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So for those who maybe don't know, even though this has been around for over 3 decades, can you tell us a little bit about Les Mis and then what your role is and how it kind of factors into the story?
I mean, the elevator pitch, I guess, for Les Mis would be, it's over the course of the 3 hour show, you meet several characters, all of whom are experiencing a tremendous amount of upheaval, whether it's it's cultural, social, private, personal, religion, all of it. I mean, it really does kind of go the whole landscape of sort of upheaval in a time where there was a great deal of unrest in France. And so, while the story focuses on Jean Valjean mostly, it almost feels like it could zoom in on any one of these characters because you really do feel that you see all of their struggles and all of their suffering in a very kind of personal way. It's basically takes place in France, and you have all of these characters who are going through changes. And it kind of comes like top down, like any society. It's this sort of change with how the system is run, and there's a great deal of rebellion, So, I mean, to kind of sum it up in like a nutshell, you have Jean Valjean, who's we find that he got into some trouble when he was younger, and then we meet him later in his life when he's sort of reinvented himself and become a pillar of society. And his story of weaving through all of these other characters, who he tries to help, who he can't help, and some who are out to hinder his progress. So it's I mean, there's so many themes we could get into, but that's
Sure.
generally it's his sort of story. So the way I figure into it is my character is Thénardier, and I'm the innkeeper, is who we see him. But the story sort of runs over the course of like 30 years. So I start as an innkeeper who's just kind of this sticky fingered, thief of sorts, but also like this kind of like very entertaining scoundrel, and people love that he's kind of nasty. But then, the revolution starts to happen, and there's this kind of shift in society and basically comforts. And so when he starts to lose his business, he kind of leans into his sort of eviler side, and has this band of degenerates, so there's a lot of thieving and a lot of probably murder, it's suggested, and then later we see that after the revolution has kind of happened, then he's suddenly a grave robber. So he's got a really beautiful story arc. People just love him.
I say he really grows over
He really
the
does. Yeah, he learns a lot about himself.
So again, with the show being around for quite some time, how did you approach this character? Like, how did you develop it to make it your own?
It's a great question. I didn't have a tremendous amount of history with the show. Of course, I always knew about it, and when I, about almost 30 years ago now, I was in high school, and my mentor at the time took me to see the show, and that's the only time I saw it. So I was about 15 then. It has such a hefty history, and there's so many I want to say iconic in air quotes because it is, it's iconic, but because you start to think, oh, I heard it this way, that's how it's done. And I didn't really have that voice in my head for this particular very specific character. And he's often very blokish. What I liked so much about the character was that I didn't have all of these preconceived notions, and so I was just looking at the words on the page. And what I kind of noticed about him as I was preparing for the audition initially was that he is wildly playful with language. Used a lot of wordplay and a lot of innuendo and a lot of sort of backhanded compliments, and because he's very clever. And so I noticed that, in vaudeville, there's this sort of, they call it a patter song, which is just the quick, wordy, almost list songs. And that was what kind of rang true to me, because those are the characters I usually play. I usually do like big, broad musical comedy. So I kind of brought that to this character, and I thought, I can't be the, because he sort of almost sounds like he's kind of half asleep in some of the recordings you hear, and kind of like, well, what do you know about, that wasn't what the directors wanted, and that really wasn't what I wanted to do. So I brought that into the room, and they liked what I was selling. So a few months later, we were in rehearsals, and we just kind of like took this role that I think a lot of people are used to hearing a certain way, and we turned it on its head, and we made him kind of like this very lithe, playful clown, vaudevillian, in some aspects.
That's awesome. So as an actor, do you feel like from rehearsal to now, do you still feel like there's changes happening to this character as you're developing? I guess you're going on.
I was actually just asked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I hadn't really thought about it, because when we are at the 2 year mark, at least for me, or past it now, there have been a lot of developments, I think, but I think it's been gradual. So I don't think I can even tell you what's happened. But I guarantee you, if I was someone, I can't watch myself. But if I were, if they showed me, a video of opening night, I would probably not even recognize the character, because it is this kind of delicious playground, and like it's like a sandbox. His especially Master of the House. There's so much prop play and so much wordplay and so much sort of mischief. That me and the creatives, when we worked on the staging for this, there was a lot of looseness to it, and that, like, all right, so here are the boundaries. Just don't color outside the lines, but play around and see how this. So yeah, I mean, there has been. I think he's become. I think I found over the course of these 2 years, more of his danger. I think I started with his play, but I think I've over these 2 years, I've found that he is actually a quite a threatening character when he wants to be. And so that, I think, has started to kind of find itself on the scale.
That kind of leads into the next question, where the show it has this really dark and serious tone, but your character is more of that comedic, funny person. How do you find the balance between those two? Because like you said, you kind of got to you're finding this more dark side to him, but he's still, people are laughing. They tend to laugh during his
Yeah, no,
scenes.
it is. I mean, he's the comic relief. He and his wife are the comic relief. And in the novel originally, they are just these unredeemable monsters, but the writers of the musical decided that that was their clown. So they were, because I think that there's this weird line where people kind of like to laugh at evil, but I think, the way I find that balance is, it's just beautifully written. I mean, these circumstances he's in, between like clumsily sort of selling a child, I mean, it's such a horrible thing. I mean, like there's nothing okay about what he's doing, but the fact that it's the framework is almost kind of, it's like over the top cartoonish, or sort of in that world, it is. It's weirdly funny, even like he drags out this body after the revel, after one of the big battles in Paris, and he drops him in the sewers, and he's like rifling through, and he's like, it's almost like he's at a buffet. Like, oh my gosh, let's get a little shrimp here. It's like, so I think it's the circumstances that are written that are just so extreme that I think the audiences just can't help but laugh at some of these despicable acts that he does. So it's really the writing,
It's kind of like laughing uncomfortably at times, just like I'm not supposed to be laughing, but I am because it is funny.
And I do. So there are some nights where you can almost hear people testing the waters, like, is it okay to laugh right now? Because up to that point, you've seen really sad stuff, and I think everyone's and there's just really cool kinetic energy where people just start to kind of give themselves license to just breathe and laugh,
So, how do you feel like this role has challenged you as an actor?
Well, I think a lot of that, usually I play sort of the comedic song and dance man, and there's not a lot of darkness to most of the roles I do. So I think that this is kind of this has very much encouraged and demanded the darker underbelly of a character that you have to acknowledge, while still carrying the mantle of the comedy. So I think that that's been sort of my journey, my major journey with Les Mis, is finding the threat under the joke.
I was going to say, because you do have an impressive comedic, you know, like Mighty Python Spamalot, like, is one of the greatest, funniest shows ever.
Yeah.
But there's
yeah.
quite a few that you just, the producers and, you know, traditional comedies. And this is like, when I was kind of doing my research here, I was like, wow, this is like a, not a comedy that he's doing yes. now, you know?
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, really, that when I got the audition for the show, I did not see me having a chance at this. I thought that's not what I do. I'm not a great singer. You know, I can sing, but I don't sing like everybody else in this show. You know, there's definitely a little something different, you know, than I'm doing vocally. But I was thrilled that they thought, no, we can incorporate what you do and we can make something out of this. So yeah, because it is, it's quite a, like a churn with what I usually do.
Do you have like a specific ritual to get into character, or do you just like do you have to like get into the mindset of it, or do you just fall right into it?
What I tend to like to do within reason is before I go on, I generally like to joke around, whether it's with my castmates, or I've got quite a few people on the crew in props and in wardrobe and stagehands that I like to just try to make them laugh, you know, because that mm-hmm. sort of loosens me up. So that's generally because he does need to go out there with a sense of ease and a sense of humor. So I find that if that's a sort of a mode and a sort of a state of flow I can get into, that really kind of helps me just seamlessly, you know, take off with this scoundrel when I hit the stage.
I love that. What themes of this show do you feel like resonate the most with you?
Oh, well, I mean, I think over my 2+ years now with it, that it's changed so much, you know, because there are so that's the beauty of this show. And I think I was trying to allude to that in my cumbersome way of explaining what it's about is, you know, it touches on so many themes that either will or will not resonate with everybody, but and it's such a broad writing. And that's the genius of it. Over all these years, people can come back probably 10, 15, 20 years later and hear it completely differently because it's all so specific to experience, you know?
Sure.
So I personally, you know, the theme that I, you know, especially in light of recent developments culturally and socially and politically, I think one of the most important themes right now for this show is empathy. You know, I think that that's every day, multiple times a day, we are given an opportunity to practice our empathy. You know, I would love for people to come see this show and be reminded on hopefully a more than just surface level that we encounter and pass by people all the time who are silently struggling and suffering, and we don't know the story. We don't know their story. We don't know everyone's story. We can write a story because of what we're seeing, but we don't know. And I think that if there's ever been a show that kind of encourages you to take a second look or just take an extra beat and say, I don't know what's going on there, and if there's anything I can do, even if it's just a kind look, you know, empathy is our only path forward. And I think that's a recurring theme throughout the show for me, you know, and stronger now than it was when we started 2 years ago. It's just like, that's kind of mounted as I've worked on it.
Like you said, because of the way things are going right now, you feel that a little bit.
Yes. Harder. Yeah. 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 It really kind of like spikes when it shows up in the show.
So traveling on the road can be difficult. So how do you prioritize your mental health while on tour?
So I live in Chicago, and I've got a wife back there and a couple of dogs. You know, the homesickness is the biggest trick for me, you know, that, sure. And usually, you know, I think I've gotten better at dealing with homesickness. You know, I call it my witching hour in the afternoon, and that's, which is like that time where, okay, well, I've had my coffee, I've hit the fitness center, I've, you know, I've read my book. And, so there's like that 2-hour window of like mental health that I really have to focus on. And that usually is, okay, we're gonna find a movie theater. Okay, we're gonna find a sandwich shop.
Sure.
The other part of it is a strict schedule for me. I have
Okay.
bedtime. I give myself a bedtime every night because I'm getting to an age now where like sleeping in isn't an option. You wake up.
Yes.
There's no like, oh, I'm gonna roll over. I just can't anymore. So if I go to bed too late, then I'm just robbing myself of hours of sleep. So early bedtime, lots of water, and actually something else that really is good for my mental clarity and health is this wonderful app called Marco Polo, where I send video chats to a ton of my friends back home. And so, while I don't get to talk to them all the time, I get to see them and hear them. Because it's about community now more than ever. It's about community and leaning into community.
That's a fantastic answer, especially the Marco Polo. As a psychologist, I always wonder, like, how do people, like, it's important to prioritize your mental health, especially in a job like yours that is very, you're traveling, you like 60 years now.
And I'm very lucky. There's a lot of good people on this show, and there's a sense of community out here. But there's no replacing friendships of 25 years that are just, so it sort of sometimes feels like I'm floating in outer space, wake up in the
Sure.
morning, like I have no idea what city I'm in. Where are we?
Is there anything special that you look for in the cities that you visit to do, or like specific like
Yes.
museums or restaurants or
100%. I always the two things I always look for are especially the night that I get in, I'll research ahead and I try to find the best pizza places. I love pizza. I'm a pizza fanatic. I have a pizza oven at my house in the backyard. I love finding a good place. And I've found dozens over the past couple of years. So that's one. And the other is I try to find the coolest record shop. But during the pandemic, I became really into vinyl. Me and my wife just like, we found that we really love listening to records. So that's the other thing. So if you have any recommendations, pizza or records, I'm all ears for Detroit.
I'll send you a list.
Okay, good.
So what is something about this production that you feel like will stick with you from now until forever?
Something about this production. I think, I've the longest production I've ever done was Spamalot on Broadway. I did that for about a little shy of 2 years, and I was a much younger man then. That show closed over 15 years ago, I think now, and that's the longest production I've ever was a part of. So this is exceeding that by quite a bit now, and I think what I'm learning from such a long run is how to tap into a sense of play and spontaneity.
Sure.
All these perform. I mean, we're well over 800 performances now that we've done this show, which is just crazy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was just a couple of weeks ago that we hit the 800 mark. And it's still. I mean, I still get nervous. Right, especially Master of the House. I mean, and so. That's what, and I love that. I love that I still get nervous, and excited, and all of those feelings, because it really is a dream job. I mean, I wanted to do this kind of work. I've wanted to do this work all my life, and I've been very lucky that this is how I pay my bills. And when I go to the accountant every year, I'm an actor. It's a real gift. But I think, learning how to present this show 8 times a week, month after month, year after year, with a sense of freshness and spontaneity. That's what I've learned from this.
I love that. Final question for you is just what are you hoping audiences walk away from Les Mis with?
Well, I mean, I hope they walk away thinking that was a great time. Yeah, I'm really glad I did that. But I think
Of
on a
course, of
deep
course.
level, I do feel like money well spent. I mean, it really depends. I hope that people walk away feeling a sense of understanding, a sense of being seen. I think that there's so much of this show that again, it reaches out to very pointedly, very specific people for very different reasons. I mean, every night there's anywhere between 1,500 to 2,500 people in the house, and so that's 1,500 to 2,500 different perspectives and experiences. And I would love to think that everybody, to some degree, walks away feeling like that they do. They that they're seen, that they're understood, that they're welcome. And And you're gonna, again, it's just that right now, just maybe they go home and they analyze a little their sense of empathy.
Perfect. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Matt.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Les Mis will be at the Fisher Theater December 4th through the 15th. So get your tickets now on Broadway and Detroit's website. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much. You too.